Welcome. Welcome to Recipe for Peace Now. I'm your host, Sue Beller, and this is the show where we find practical, real-life solutions to difficulties bringing people together for a common goal, a common good. We will discuss listener emails, answer common questions, and at the end of the show, we will have two delicious potluck recipes made for sharing with your new community of, well, if not exactly friends, at least willing participants. If you would like to send in a question or favorite recipe, please email us at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com or visit our website, www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Also, if you would like to hear prior shows, they are archived on that website, recipeforpeacenow.com. Thanks. Now let's get started. This time we're going to be talking about adapting to change, which is, of course, something that we really need to do, well, rather regularly. So we're going to talk about, as we often do, because this is not, of course, a scripted show, let's talk about what types of change do we frequently need to adapt to. Yes, what kinds of change do we see a lot and that we have to be flexible for? We have to really think, well, we're headed towards success, but maybe we've got a different way of getting there, right? Right. Mm-hmm. So what types of change within our context, within the context of a dispute resolution, a mediation, a negotiation, a seminar, a workshop even, because sometimes they go in a certain way because people are interested in certain things. What kind of change do we need to adapt to on a regular basis? Yes. Oh, I see there's lots of people. Thank you so much for all of you being here. Thank you. Thank you for your interest and for coming. You know what? This, I think, our number one's going to be, and this oftentimes happens, and it is a change that we need to adapt to, a change in group membership. Yeah. A change in who's in our group. Who is our, what's the group makeup, right? Sometimes people come and go. Sometimes they're assigned for a certain amount of time. I do a lot of corporate, and that happens too. Or else you have some, I'm going to call them interns, people who are there for experience and they're under a program, and they're only assigned for like a year. And then they leave, although they're, usually they're still interested, so they still help out. Because we're interesting people, yes. So the change in group membership. Mm-hmm. I think we're also going to be talking about outsider change, something that we didn't control that changed in the outside world, that changed our circumstances. Outside change. Mm-hmm. Good point. A lot of people are talking about economic change. Something has happened, either positively or negatively, and we are going to need to deal with it. Something's happened in the big outside world, mm-hmm, that changed our situation, our circumstances, changed something that we need to do, right? Mm-hmm. I'm going to call this public opinion change. The idea that the public has either gotten on board or thinks that maybe you should take a different path. And it may make a difference. It may make a difference, especially if you're dealing with politicians. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because they worry about public opinion. They do it in a place where we democratically elect people, because you have to be elected, and they could lose their fancy job. I know this is a global show, and not everybody lives in the same type of system. But still, I think public opinion does affect leadership people. Mm-hmm. This is a good point, too. I'm going to call it research change, that you looked something up, found something out, and went, oh, we're going to need to modify that. Mm-hmm. And let's do our last one, because if we have more than, we're going to have seven of them. Well, that's all right. We may not get to the recipes. That happens to us a lot, doesn't it? But this is a good one, too. The opinions of the participants change, right? We've worked together, we've gotten together, we've researched it, we've thought it out, and our preconceived notions have shifted, right? Hopefully more towards each other. Yeah, our ideas change, our opinions change. Okay, so let's start with the first one, which is the group membership has changed and we need to adapt. Yes, as Gabria and others are saying, it affects group dynamic because you're bringing in a new personality. Good point, Gabria. Gabria, thank you. That affects group dynamic because you're bringing in new personalities. Yeah, it does affect the group dynamic. We've all got to get used to the new one because we've gotten used to the way it was and we've already gotten along and we're heading towards a successful outcome and then something shifted. Usually, I don't see people just quit a group, generally speaking, but I do a lot of groups where it's within a corporation, within a corporate culture. And sometimes people either take a different job within the corporation, they're not the same level anymore or the same department, or they might not be in the company anymore, or they might have had a time period and somebody else gets to come. You know, sometimes it's rotating, yes, and like that. So it's a lot of times I see a shifting group dynamic because of different members coming and going. Primarily because they had a set time period or they did something that caused them not to be a member of the group anymore. Yeah, do you understand? Yeah, usually people don't, if they're interested, they don't quit a group. Yeah, people are saying moved away, got more responsibilities, so they couldn't really shoulder the group responsibilities anymore, right? A lot of times, if you're doing a non-corporate group, sometimes if somebody needs to move away or something, they make a suggestion as to who would be a good replacement. And even in the corporate setting, when their time is up or when they are shifting, right, different position or whatever, sometimes they get a position out of the country or out of town, right? Even out of the country, they can still be, of course, a member if they're the same level. Because, of course, Skype exists and other ways of communication. I think it's good to have the new person who's coming in, if you know who they are. And if you're corporate and like that, you usually do know who they are. It's not a secret. I think it's good for them to visit and kind of shadow your participant that's leaving so that the new person gets the idea of how it works. And gets introduced around in a less stressful manner where they don't really have responsibilities now. You've got to do this, right? Where they're still in the hello, I'm glad to meet you stage. Does that make sense? Yeah. Yeah, kind of like an apprentice. Yeah. In its way, but it's really just to shadow the leaving participant. And so you feel comfortable when you're it, and feel comfortable with how to handle the assignments and how to handle the situation. Yeah, and you don't just get thrown in and say, you know, swim. Well, no. Yeah, I'm not sure if that's an Americanism or not. People are saying so they don't get thrown in the deep end of the pool. It's kind of an Americanism, but it means that you just show up and are expected to do all kinds of things. And you haven't had a chance to get your breath and say who you are yet. Yeah. And so, yeah, so it makes for a smoother transition if you can get the new person to come in while we've still got the same group dynamic and kind of work their way into it. Yeah. People are asking how long should the person be shadowing, should be training, really, kind of. I want to say it depends. I know you guys say I say that a lot, but it does. It depends on when you know who the replacement person is, the actual human individual. Sometimes you know that it's a level of employee, the supervisor of a certain segment of a corporation, for example, the head of it, yeah. But you don't know who the human is exactly for a while. I like to invite them as soon as I know that the participant that we have is leaving and that this person is going to be their replacement. Usually that means that they can come for several months at least, right? Because it's a smooth transition. Yeah. I think it's important to kind of transition in. And the more time you have to do it, the smoother it goes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, this is a good question. People are asking, what if it doesn't go smoothly? What if this person is really not a good fit? And the answer is, it's good to know that too, before you've really got them as one of your participants. Because especially corporate, you could have a little talk with them, right? About the dynamic and about getting along. If that doesn't work and they really are unlikely to succeed in the group, as we say, and you know these things, right? You can feel it. Stuck with them, you have to have the group discussion, right? And the civility rules discussion and like that. Corporate, you can usually appeal to a higher power and not get them fired from their job, but get somebody else who's an equal level and would be acceptable to corporate and has some, well, you got to have people that have some say, I mean, that have some power. But I try to switch them out. And quite frankly, they don't like being there either if they're not a good fit. They don't mind. They'll suggest somebody else who would be more enthusiastic, right? Yeah, it's not a sin. And sometimes someone is so busy that they really can't fulfill their obligations, right? Yeah, let them suggest someone else. It's a polite way of saying, you know, let's find out who would like this, who's of the appropriate level in the organization. Yeah, there's no sin in that. And have them be part of the process, so that it's not insulting at all. And explain to the group, you know, they've got so many outside obligations. And sometimes people do. I mean, they've got family obligations or some sort of other volunteer obligation that's really time-consuming and really important too. Yeah. And so it's not that they don't want to. It's just that they'd prefer that someone who has more time, more interest. Right. Yeah, there's always somebody else. And the good recommendation is very important. Yes. And then that person is brought in. Right. And it makes it very smooth transition. And then everybody already knows everybody else. And it's like you've always been here. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is a good point, too. Ali says that it's a setback when you need time, when you need a time period to be brought up to speed. Yeah, it's a setback when they need a time period to be brought up to speed. That's the idea of the come first idea and be mentored by the prior participant. It makes for a very smooth transition. Now, it is true, as Ali says, that sometimes you need a little bit of time to bring someone up to speed to really get them to know how it works and what they need to be done and what the requirements and expectations are, right? This will go gradually if you've got the gradual introduction of the new person, right? And will be very smooth. If the old person quits the group, usually because they're no longer employed, right? Yeah. Then you've got a new person and you're going to need to guide them as leader and give them a little bit of help, right? Yeah, kind of a shock to the group dynamic. It's not that it'll go okay, but you're going to need to be open to questions and to guidance and to remember that they've never seen this before and it's kind of overwhelming, right? Yeah. So they do need a time period of adjustment. And the other group members need a time period of adjustment to them, too, right? Yeah, even if they're fabulous, and I'm sure they are, but it's just different, and different needs a time period of adjustment. Mm-hmm. Barbara says it's a learning period. and it's a good example for team building. Yeah, it's a learning period. You know, it's a learning period for all of us in how to get the civility rules and get along and work together and make a team. It's good practice for everyone. It really is. Now, I prefer a smoother transition, but if that's not my option, it's not a disaster either. It's just a good learning moment, right? Good teaching moment. Mm-hmm. Yes. Now, our next topic is outside change, change that happens in the big bad world outside that we didn't really cause and that now affects what we're going to do. We're going to have to adapt, right? Right. Mm-hmm. Mohammed says a lot of times it's a new government intervention. Good point, Mohammed. A lot of times it is. It might be kind of a positive government intervention. It might be something that the government, or the politicians, or whoever, the people in charge, thought was a very good idea. And so they made a new law, a new regulation, a new requirement, right? Yeah. Yes, as Karen says, you need to accommodate and reach out. Reach out maybe to politicians, but it might be too late if you've got a government intervention. Reach out to grassroots, to let the rule makers know that there has been an unintended consequence. A lot of times that happens. They make a rule because they make a law, they pass a law, regulation, there's a court ruling sometimes, that whoever it is that made the ruling didn't consider all the angles of it. And it's going to have an unintended and probably negative consequence. Yeah. And so need to speak up, right? Yeah. So outside change. But it does make us adapt because if it's no longer legal, for example, then we're going to have to think about how we can do it legally and how we can get a repeal of what happened. And like that, right? Right, yeah. Yeah, this is a good point. Thomas says there's another group with similar goals is formed, and you have to be adaptable because it's an outside change. There's another group that's been formed. They might be similar. They might have similar goals. Well, let's try to get together with them. That would be a good idea, especially if they're well-funded. Excuse me, took a sip of water. They have similar goals. This is probably good because you can join forces, and the more the merrier. Sometimes they have opposing goals, though. They are against whatever it is that you're for. Well, we're going to have to deal with them, too. We're going to have to see if we can talk to them to see what it is that we can get together on, right? And maybe we'd like the same result. We just have different viewpoints of how to get there, right? Right. And that's where we need a good third-party impartial to keep the conversation going, right? And that's often us, the third-party impartial. Mm-hmm. I think our next topic that we were going to talk about is economic change, right? Yeah. That is outside change usually, also, because it has to do with how we're funded, right? Yeah. Yeah, Helma and others are saying that sometimes your dependent upon funding has been eliminated. You didn't do anything. It's an outside circumstance, really. The economy, not so good and like that, and some sort of a funding group that you were relying on has disbanded, has decided that they fund something different every few years, right? Has in some way not promised the funds that you were counting on, right? Economic change. What are we going to do? Well, yeah, we're going to alternate fundraise, right? And if we can't do that, we're going to have to cut costs down to bare minimum. And we may have to delay some sort of a big project, right? Adapting to change. We're not down. We're not out. We'll get a different funding source. But temporarily, we're going to put all our focus on that so that we can keep going, right? Yeah, these things take money. Mm-hmm. So, okay. Josh and others are saying that sometimes economic change is not negative. No. There's a funding increase through a grant, and you can extend the mission but need to talk, right? Yes. Yes. A funding increase due to grants, or whatever your funding increase came from, and you can increase the mission, but you need to talk. Yeah. You can do better. You're going to have some money. You're going to have some spare funds. What should we do with them, right? Yeah. How should we proceed now that we can do even more good? Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's the question. And that is something that we need to decide as a group before we go forward. You have to decide what you're going to do now. Uh-huh. Yeah. This is a good point, too. Shannara says that sometimes there's an internal business change. Mm-hmm. And the corporate culture shifts. An internal business change and the corporate culture shifts. I have actually seen that. I've been in business for more than 35 years. I was a child when I became a lawyer, just saying. And I have actually seen that sometimes the base shifts. Corporate culture that's been in existence for quite a while and you do things this way, right? That's just how they've always been done. Somehow, sometimes that shifts and the rules change. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of interesting to see during the transition period because there's always a faction that wants to shift radically and a faction that wants to shift not at all. And so there's kind of a push-pull, and you'll be left with some sort of a negotiated compromise. Mm-hmm. So an internal business change, which is outside our group, and we have to adapt to it, adapt to new leadership, adapt to new mission, adapt to what the corporate image is now, right, or wants to be in the future. The key to that is to listen carefully and to be flexible, not in your principles, but in adapting to the change of how things are done, right? Yeah. And to understand that everything's in flux, right? Because the rules will be real strict in some way that don't work. And this is your teaching moment because, of course, you have the ear of the main people, of the board, and or why this would be better. Yeah, I always come with a couple of alternatives that are similar to what they're, so it's comfortable, and will really be more practical, right? Because they don't understand the practical parts. Mm-hmm. So, and corporate economic change like that, right, corporate change, is usually tied to public opinion change, which is our next topic up. Yes, businesses, big ones, move slowly, and they like the way they do business. But there's public opinion out there, and the internet exists. And what you did 50 years ago, even 20 years ago, is now under, and have been doing it for that long, is now under scrutiny. People want to know what you're doing, what it is that is being the emphasis, for example. Yes, public opinion changes. And when public opinion changes, you need to really think about how that's going to impact your group, your overarching organization, if you're doing corporate, and what the recommendation should be, right? Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, this is a good point. Michael and others are saying it's important when dealing with elected officials. Elected officials are very worried about public opinion. They are. They're worried that somehow people will get the idea that they are not in favor of fill in the blank. The last march around here was women's rights, and people look at your record, right? And so it is when dealing with government, especially elected officials. Yes, public opinion is very important. Mm-hmm. Siham says that you need to have a deliberate use of the media. Yeah. People are talking about endorsements and things like that. It doesn't have to be a celebrity endorsement, which is usually actual for money, unless you've got a cause that they're particularly fond of. Pardon me. And would like to be the face of. Which is always really good in case anyone cares. Yes. Unless, I know sometimes celebrities do something bad, but it's still usually not a reflection on the organization. And you can deliberately use media to promote your ideas, to promote what you think should happen, to promote your successful outcome, right? Yeah. So a deliberate use of media, not old-fashioned media usually, although, you know, there is a certain validity in doing like an interview and having it published, and then it can be republished on the web and like that. Yeah. And so never dismiss traditional media either. Even a thing like a business talk show. There's a show around here called Charlie Rose, where he interviews people and asks them questions about what they're doing and things like that. It has some traction because it gets repeated. It gets put on YouTube, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's important when dealing with elected officials, and let's have deliberate use. Mm-hmm. Yes, Devin and others are kind enough to say what I always say because you guys have been listening. When you're doing the process, when you're in the middle of it, I do not like people, in fact, I actually have a rule about it. I do not like people to sit and text or blog or Facebook or whatever it is they're doing about what they're doing, right? Because, A, it's a spur-of-the-moment thing and things will change. And, B, it's in writing forever and ever, folks. Yeah. And it gets little snippets of it will get quoted out of context in a shocking manner. So I actually have a no internet device use while we're in session, and please don't do it about us when we get out. Right? Right. And people do understand that if you tell them outright. I have no subtlety, and I'm big on telling people outright what it is that's required, that needs to be done. And one of those things is don't just blog or text or whatever it is you're doing. Let's have radio silence, so to speak. And I explained that that's the reason, because it will make us our job harder. And it will, too. Mm-hmm. Yes. Nashio and others are talking about electing a spokesperson for the group. If there's going to be media interest, yes, you do need a spokesperson for the group. Someone who usually is selected for their style, for their ability to speak with the media. It might be a written style, depending on what kind of media we're talking about. But it needs to, A, kind of be run past all of us and approved, and not memorized, but you know what I mean, the idea. And B, it needs to be, the spokesperson needs to really keep up with things. And if our group is somehow getting trashed in the media, in social media especially, we need to answer, or to at least decide whether we need to answer or not. Right? Right. Yeah. And it is very important to have one spokesperson. They speak for all of us. And they are experienced speakers usually, and they know what points to be made. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Perhaps they're experts, because that's our next topic, is opinion. The answer is yes. We want to have some. We want some expert opinion. Hang on a second. I got to take a sip of water. Yeah. And the question is, if we're adapting to change, how do we know we need to bring in an expert? Right? Yeah. You know, this is a good point, too. Elizabeth says that actually the expert is assistance in making and adapting to change. You bring an expert to help you make the change and to adapt to it because you're having trouble knowing where to go next, right? The expert is actually someone who assists you in adapting to the change. Yes. And says, you know, this is my expert opinion. This is information you need. Right? Yeah. I don't know if it's ever, whatever an expert tells you is mostly opinion, right? And not necessarily facts. Now, I can bring in facts, too. But a lot of it is opinion. It's advice, right? And advice is good, especially expert advice that you have confidence in, which is the key to it. Mm-hmm. This is true, too. Hussein says that when you bring in an expert to help you adapt to change, partial and can understand all sides. Thank you, Hussein. That's a real good point. The expert is impartial and can understand all sides. Yes, really takes a look at the situation and then gives an opinion as to how you need to adapt to change, how you need to adapt to the situation. Yes. Now, partial and can understand all sides. You know, this is true, too. Carrie and others are saying that even if you get an expert, a professional expert, as in someone who gets paid, maybe, but we've talked about experts before, and they don't necessarily need to be a paid expert with a bunch of credentials. It would be nice if your expert had done it before, whatever it is that you want, right? Yeah, they don't need to be an expert witness, a professional expert, but they've got a great deal of expertise because they've successfully done whatever it is that you're trying to do. Yes. Mm-hmm. People are asking for an example. In the United States, marijuana is federally illegal, right? Right. Federal law trumps everything, all other law. The Supreme Court is above all the other courts and like that. So it's still illegal, still on the books to be illegal. The states various organizations tried to make it legal over the years. They lobbied, they put in a lot of funds, they talked to politicians and like that. And all of the politicians agreed in private, but they wouldn't back the initiative in public because of public opinion, right? Right, they were scared of losing their jobs. So the organizations, and there were many of them, of all different needs and diversity, actually got together, which is a sentence that's quite remarkable in and of itself, the got together part. They got together and they decided to try to do it on a statewide basis, right? And at that point, they brought in experts in state law, experts in each state that they thought they might approach because they needed the first state to do it, right? And then others would follow, and they found out that the feds didn't come crashing in. So you needed all kinds of experts and kind of lobbyists. Does that make sense? Yeah. People who are professional at promoting an idea, right? Promoting the legality of something that has been illegal for many, many, many years, right? And you need some scientists. You need all kinds of people to say they thought it was a good idea and to reach out to all kinds of other people to say it was a good idea, right? Right. So what we did was we prepped and got experts in. Now, did we take all the expert advice? No, but we got everybody's opinion, everybody's expertise. We heard just about, I think, every side, everything that could go wrong, so that we were prepared, especially for the first date. And yes, it took two tries. We got very close the first try. It was on the ballot for an election. And we didn't get out the vote enough because we didn't know how. And so we called in some experts to tell us how to really appeal to people to make them go to the polls and not just say, I know it'll win. They don't need my vote, right? Because there's a certain amount of that. I know that it's fine. They don't need my vote. Well, yeah, they kind of do. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because, you know, one vote becomes many. So anyway, you can ask, you can get differing kinds of experts with differing viewpoints so that you understand what's out there, so that you can understand how to make an informed decision, adapt to change, and go forward. And that's the important part, the part that you all reach consensus and how to go forward. And you know what? That doesn't work. We're going to rethink it, reach consensus again, and try again. Right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So expert opinion when adapting to change is very valuable. It really is. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The next thing that we're going to talk about is change that is caused by your research, right? This happens. You come in with an idea, and then the group does the research, you divide up into subcommittees and like that. Yes. And as Linda says, upon closer inspection, the present path needs modification. Upon closer inspection, the present path needs modification. Yes, it's not practical. It's not doable at this time. We're going to need to modify, take this step forward successfully, and then work our way to the other steps. It's kind of like a big deal was made for the first state to legalize marijuana, because you had to find out, you had to present how to do it. It had never been done, right? And rules about the shops, the actual brick and mortar shops where you can go in and buy marijuana. You show your driver's license or your government-issued ID, and you can buy marijuana. But there was rules about the location of the shops. There, you know what I mean? And also because, as I explained to you, it was a change in culture, right? A change in government culture, which is harder than corporate culture. There needed to be lots of thinking it through, and how should this work? And then you needed a whole inspection process for the plants, right? Yeah. It's no longer a baggie full of oregano. Yeah, you needed all kinds of levels of what's this and what's that, right? Right. Mm-hmm. And so you needed to call everybody in and do a lot of research. Mm-hmm. Yes. This is true, too. Ella says that you need to research all sides, and don't just stop when you see an appealing answer. You need to think it through. That's it. You have to look at everything. You have to see what the opposite argument is, right? A lot of people, they go onto the internet, they find something that agrees with them, because honest to God, you can find something on the internet that agrees with your ideas pretty much no matter what your idea is. And that's really the truth, right? And you have a tendency to go, geez, that's good. Let's stop. We don't need to go forward because we've got it. We've got the information that we need. Mm-hmm. We are smart. Yeah. We've got this covered. But the answer is, well, yeah, you probably do. But let's see if that's actually true. Right? Right. Mm-hmm. So sometimes you need to really think it through first, especially if it's the first one. Mm-hmm. Kinto and others are saying that it would be good to role play, role, where you take the other side so that you can see all sides and you really argue it sincerely and really have thought it through. So you can see all sides and really think about it and go, oh, wow, let's really work on that, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So our last one, oops, I don't know if we're going to make it to the recipes or not. If not, I think maybe one. We don't have too much time. But we're having a fabulous conversation. Thank you all for being here. Also, prior shows, which people say, I don't say enough, our prior shows are archived on the website, www.recipeforpeacenow.com. And so our last topic is something good, right? We've done all the others. We've got a pretty tight group again. We've adapted to change. And over that time period, we've changed. Our opinions have changed. And you've got to adapt to that, too. You've got to adapt to your new way of thinking and to the new way of thinking about the others around you. Yes, it's so important. Our opinions have changed. We came in with a preconceived notion. Right. Yeah, we did. Of how it's going to go. Right. And then it shifted. We adapted to change. It modified. We thought, oh, I don't know that that's true. Right? Yeah, I don't know that that's true. And then we worked our way from there. Mm-hmm. So we adapted to change personally. Mm-hmm. Daniel says it's gaining empathy. It is. Empathy for the other participants who are different than you. And empathy for maybe outside groups and things like that who are also different and need to be approached. Mm-hmm. Yeah, in a civil manner, of course. Mm-hmm. Yes, remember that empathy is understanding agreement. Empathy is understanding, not agreement. Right? Doesn't have to, you have to agree, but you do have to understand. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, folks are talking about breaking out the 5W questions so that we can all understand and have empathy. The 5W questions, thank you, yes, thank you, are who, what, where, when, and why. Who, what, where, when, and why. And they are things that we, those are questions we need to think about the answers to as we are adapting. Mm-hmm. And quite frankly, we're always constantly adapting to change. It's just sometimes it's more monumental and more definite than others. Does that make sense? Yeah. Sometimes the change is subtle. It doesn't seem so big time. And sometimes the change is sudden and very definite. And you go, oh, that's interesting, right? Yeah. And so we need to be able to really think that through, to really say, you know, I'm going to think about it, and we're going to think about it as a group, and we're going to reach consensus. Mm-hmm. So who, what, where, when, and why? And sometimes the who is, who are we now? Yeah. What do we think? Where did we learn this? When should we act? And why have we changed? Right? Yeah, those are fabulous questions. Mm-hmm. Right. Oh, there we go. People are working their way towards the recipes. Like, you know, you're gonna run out of time. You're right, I am. There's like 8 minutes left. So James and others say that use food as a tool to gain better understanding and reach consensus. Yes. Thank you. He's provided the segue, see, so we could get the recipes done. Yes, Recipe for Peace Now does indeed advocate using food as a tool so that we can actually get together over something that's not going to bother us, right? And have something pleasant to talk about and have a time out if things were starting to get a little bit heated, right? And it gives the leader a chance to have a little quiet word with maybe somebody in the group. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Kind of a, oh, well, this is not exactly appropriate type sentence, right? And we're going to go forward from there. But it gives us a chance to know each other better, right? And if you're going to have food, which you're going to use as a tool to get everybody together, you know, you might be hungry. I mean, it might be dinner time. We might eat first. But it's a convivial atmosphere that we are going for so that we can all get along with each other, so that we can all go forward, right? Right. Mm-hmm. So if you're going to have food, you're going to need to take a survey. You're going to find out if anybody has an allergy, something they don't eat, a religious prohibition to some sort of food, and then you're going to tell everybody so they don't accidentally bring the wrong thing, right? Right. Also, we're going to ask people when they come with the food to also come with a list, not what is it, but what is in it, so that I can run my eye down the list and see if I can eat it. Mm-hmm. Now, I actually think that the leader, which is us usually, should bring at least one safe recipe, just so we've got it. A safe recipe is one that is made of food that nobody's allergic to, right? Well, nobody's going to bring even an adventure recipe where someone can't eat it. But it's ingredients that my people would have eaten before and be sure that they can eat, right? I can run my eye down and say, oh, I got that. Now, in my area, it's not the same as your area because this is a global show. In your area, a curry dish might be very, very common, for example. But in my area, it is not. And that would be an adventure recipe. An adventure is something that I've taken a survey. My people can eat, but it is something that's not real daily food around here. It's something kind of more unusual. And it has some items that some people might not eat, although we've taken the survey for this group. Yeah, I'm kind of cautious with food because the key is to this that you don't want anybody to have a bad time. Yeah, we want everybody to have a good time and have a convivial atmosphere. Now, we usually only get to one recipe, even though I promised two at the beginning. I think we're going to do one today. And this is the safe recipe that's been hanging out for a couple of weeks. Because I'm trying to be better about that. People say you should do the one that you didn't do the week before and not skip around and do something brand new. Because you guys were looking forward to it. Yes. So this is the eggplant rigatoni. Now, you don't have to use rigatoni pasta, but I do indeed favor pasta that is not long and stringy and needs tongs. The reason being is it's just messy. I like to have something that's got a spoon in it and can be better controlled by the people eating it, right? It's kind of a buffet. It's family style. And you want to have people be able to use the server neatly and to eat it neatly and not kind of make a mess. Mm-hmm. So, I like eggplant. I really do. This is a safe recipe because it's basically vegetarian. Yeah, in addition to everything else. Well, it depends how you feel about cheese, really. Okay, so let's have a pound and a half of some sort of pieces of pasta, like a rigatoni, right? And we will, you can use bow tie or whatever you've got. We will, of course, cook it al dente according to the instructions. Let's drain it and set it aside. We're going to make it warm later. Mm-hmm. Let's have a couple of nice big eggplants, about 2 pounds worth, right? Maybe even a little bit more because I really like eggplant. Mm-hmm. And 4 garlic cloves. I know I like garlic cloves too. If you think that's too many, then just cut them back. I'm going to actually slice up the garlic real thin using one of those microplanes? No. oh, darn it, I can't figure out the name at the moment. The one where you go up and back on the blade and it slices real nice and thin. Yeah, watch your fingers. I confess that I actually wear heavy gloves to do that because I get my fingers, I lose focus and forget. Okay, so you could chop the garlic cloves if you like, but I like them. They're kind of nice sliced because they give better flavor in this. Let's have about 3 tablespoons of olive oil, a nice big, like a 28-ounce can of whole tomatoes. You can use crushed tomatoes too, but I kind of like to run a knife through them because it makes bigger pieces. We're going to take that to, well, we'll talk about the can of tomatoes. Yeah. And let's have a couple teaspoons of dried oregano, give it a lot of nice taste. A little bit of salt, maybe. And let's have a cup of shredded mozzarella. Yeah. Okie dokie. You know how to trim the eggplant and cut it into pieces. A little, like half-inch pieces. If you want, you could slice it. It depends how big it is. If I usually get a nice big eggplant, and I like to quarter them and then slice them. You know what I mean? It makes a big dice. Let's throw our lovely eggplants into a big skillet with the garlic and the oil. Well, let's do the oil and the garlic first, right? So it's nice and hot. And then throw in the eggplant. Takes about 7 minutes, 8 minutes. Eggplant should get kind of cooked, but not squishy. More like 8 minutes. You have to stir it occasionally so it doesn't stick. Let's stir in the tomatoes, which we have drained, right? Let's drain the can of tomatoes. Now, if you've used whole tomatoes, you need to kind of break them up with a spoon or something so that they are big pieces, but not whole tomatoes. You can use what they call in this area crushed tomatoes, I think, the kind that aren't whole. It's a lot cheaper. Drain them real carefully. You'll get smaller pieces, though, so you have to decide about the aesthetics. So we've got the eggplant and the garlic and the oil. We've stirred in the tomatoes, which we have kind of broken up. Let's add the oregano. Let's simmer that whole thing for about 20 minutes. You know that pasta that we made? We're gonna need to warm it now. Now, if you look at the mixture with the tomatoes and the garlic and the eggplant and like that, and it looks a little bit dry, it needs a little bit more moisture to it. Let's reserve. I'm going to say reserve a little bit of the tomato juice out of the can and use that if you need a little bit of liquid. It's got some taste to it, and it's better than using a little water. I personally use chicken stock because I just have it around. But you don't want to have to open a whole one just for that, and it's not really like a cup of it. It's just sometimes it gets a little dry. All righty. We're going to warm the little pasta up. We're going to put the pasta into our delightful eggplant, garlic, and tomato mixture. We're going to toss it all around. It's still hot, right? We're about to serve it, and it's all nice and hot and yummy. Let's mix the cup of cheese into it so that the cheese kind of melts all over on the inside. You got to do it to the last minute when everything is hot, though, because otherwise it just gets kind of gummy. But to put the cheese in and melt it slightly is so delicious. Anyway, it's a very popular recipe, right? Everybody likes it. It's fun to do. You could do it if you brought everything prepped with you in the room, if you had the facilities, and it would smell fabulous. And then it's kind of interesting to cook together, so to speak. I've been informed that's not cooking together, that's watching me make it. But same difference. And then everybody eats it real nice and hot and delicious. Yeah. So it's a good one if you've got the facilities in the room. Now, we've got a few minutes left. Let's give it a shot to do the adventure recipe. Look, sometimes I do two recipes because that one wasn't very long. Because it's got very little ingredients with the garlic and the eggplant and the tomato and a little bit of oregano. It's fabulous, though. Okay, Let's do the pineapple pork stew. I really like this. I serve it with rice because it kind of seems a little like it should go with rice, maybe even brown rice. I have a rice cooker, and so I put the rice to the side. Now, if this is the adventure recipe, because, of course, it has pork, and pork is something that not everybody eats, but we've taken our survey, and we know that we can. Mm-hmm. Okay, and I'm going to cheat, and I'm going to use canned salsa. It comes in a jar. But if you want to make salsa, yours will probably be better, but mine will be faster. Mm-hmm. Okay, let's have 2 pounds of ground pork. And let's maybe even have half and half pork and meat, right? Pounded each. Let's have a 16-ounce jar of salsa. Delicious. You know, there is such a thing as pineapple salsa. If there is such a thing in your stores, you can use it. But plain salsa will do well, too. 16-ounce jar, nice big jar. Let's have 2 16-ounce cans of red kidney beans. I know, this is so easy. It's all going to be just out of the stock stuff. You don't really have to make anything. If you want to make this more fresh and you want to make all these things raw and soak the beans and like that, more power to you. But this is my go-to fast one, right? 2 16-ounce cans of red kidney beans. You know, beans, you've got to get the slime off them. You've got to drain it and actually rinse them underwater in a colander. And then not only so that they don't have that slime they come in anymore, but also get rid of all the loose shells. They're not really shells, but the loose outside skins, right? Mm-hmm. And let's have an 8-ounce can of tomato sauce. Yum. Mm-hmm. We've got a nice big saucepan. Let's cook the meat over medium heat until it's nice and brown. Let's push the meat to the side, drain off the fat, drain off that showed up in the pot when you cooked it. Got rid of the fat, stir in the salsa, the beans, the tomato sauce. I forgot to say a cup of crushed pineapple. This pineapple pork, right? Yes, people are going, where's the pineapple? Oops. A nice big can, like a 16-ounce can. You need a whole cup of crushed pineapple, which we're also going to drain. Yeah. If you need a little bit of extra liquid in here, use the pineapple juice. If you get the kind that's in its own juice, you can save it and drink it. It's delicious. It's just pineapple juice. Yeah, put it in the fridge. But a whole cup of crushed pineapple. It's a big can of crushed pineapple drained off. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Put everything in the pot after you cook the meat. The salsa, the beans, the tomato sauce, the pineapple, and like that. Bring it to a boil. Reduce the heat. Simmer 10 minutes. Yeah. Or maybe a little bit less because everything's really cooked. Just make it hot and all incorporated. There you've got it. It's delicious. It's got the pineapple and the pork and like that. Yeah, you can simmer it a little. The simmering is just, we may bring it to boil to make it hot. And the simmering is just to incorporate the flavors. You can kind of take a look at it and see how it looks and how it's doing, right? And because it's all cooked already, so you're not really, don't have to worry about cooking it, but it needs to incorporate the flavors. Serve it with rice. It's absolutely yummy. Look, we got 2 recipes, and we are out of time. Thank you, my friends. Thank you all for being here. If you want to find us, we are at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com. Our website, www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Prior shows, they're archived on that website. Thank you for listening. Thank you for all of your participation. Thank you for being here, and please do come again. Thanks. Bye-bye.